Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The following is a presentation of the Force Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Force Center podcast feed. I'm Ken Napsok.
And I'm Joseph Scrimshaw, and this is one of our News and Cues episodes. The news stands for news, which makes a lot of sense, and the cues stands for questions, which also makes sense, but doesn't really save us that much time. Still, we like it.
It's branding, news and cues. It rhymes, kind of, sort of. It feels like it doesn't. Does it really? I don't know. I stopped writing poetry when the Vogons were doing better than me. We got a lot of fun stuff to get to today. We got a big question, as we always do. We got some fun stuff. We're going to dive into some fun speculation. Before we do all of that, though, let's remind you that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/forcecenter. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. As always, a little bit later, we'll have our Force Center Recommends, an audiobook we think you should try out on us. And Joseph, that is not all.
No, we have another offer from Insight Editions, a publisher of a ton of great Star Wars books. They are offering 35% off across their website with this special link, insighteditions.com/discount/FC35. This week, we are recommending the Insight Editions book, Secrets of the Jedi, its partner book, Secrets of the Sith, that is just out, is in our grubby little hands, and we can't wait to dive in. So get it into your hands, grubby or not. I'm not going to describe your hands as grubby, only our own. anyway, you can use the link insideeditions.com/discount/FC35.
Yeah, man, Secrets of the Jedi. I'm going to go poke through that again. I've been reading about halfway through Secrets of the Sith and having a blast. Also having a blast. We're going to talk about this book more, but it's great if you guys pick it up, because it definitely is from Sheev's point of view.
That is what I was hoping for when we learned it was Sheev's take. I was hoping for Sheev's burn book, so I can't wait to crack that open.
It's wonderful. It's wonderful. So check that out for the fun folks at Inside Editions. Star Wars and Life Adventures is where we catch up. And, you know, I'll answer for my raspy, slightly raspy. It's not as bad as I thought. I had a couple throat lozenges just shoot them real quickly before the show here. You can probably smell it, the microphone. But Joseph, what's going on with you, sir?
Yeah, a lot of fun life adventures, work adventures this week. But in particular, this was one of those weeks where it got to be like late Friday. And I was like, have I had a Star Wars adventure? Because I'm thinking about getting ready for the podcast. And like, I trust in the Force. So my wife and I went to an art show in Beverly Hills. And this is something that we've gone to before. This is a slightly smaller version. And I remember the last time we went there were some various pop culture art. This artist has this stand where he has lots of different pop culture characters with all of their clothes hung up on dryers, like hung up to dry, like they've been washed. And it makes sense with like the stormtroopers. But then like all of Bib Fortuna is hanging there. Like, is that what's being implied? Is that a Bib Fortuna costume? Is Bib Fortuna something else underneath there? Fascinating. So I'd seen that one before. And then we stopped at this booth of this artist who did this great collage work where there was like a main image of something like a cocktail glass or a typewriter. And then all of these different kind of words cut out from actual sources that sort of related to the mood or the cultural context. And I was like, oh, that's really cool. That's really interesting. I'll look at some of the prints. And lo and behold, I come across a Boba Fett collage. Which is just a fun three words to say. And it's great because it's, you know, an image of Boba Fett. And I like looking at Boba Fett. But there's this power to it because, like, looking at some of the other things, like, you know, typewriters and martinis and trees, it's like it's all the words and all the sources are definitely relating to that. But the Boba Fett collage is specifically stuff that's like from Star Wars, like the back of old Clone Wars era books and an ad for some special edition Star Wars ephemera and all of it kind of combining to build up Boba Fett. And I bought this print because, like I said, it's a picture of Boba Fett and I'm always happy to have those. But that collage, there was something about it that was just sort of like, this is to me kind of the heart of Star Wars, that ideas in Star Wars and characters in Star Wars are like so much more than the sum of their parts. They you know, bleed into culture in all these ways where you like encounter them randomly at a Beverly Hills art show. But also just that idea that once a character is on screen, there are so many different ideas, so many different, you know, creators writing them, working on them, so many words and ideas about them. And just this image of all of the different ideas that add up to this one character was like, just quintessential Star Wars to me. So I was really happy to get that.
That's downright beautiful, sir.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And then right after I bought it, I was like, God, that's my Star Wars adventure for the week. I saw somebody else at the art show with a t-shirt that said, I'm the Datalorian. And then I couldn't read it all, but like a list of rules for their children to follow. And then it said, this is the way.
That, you know, normally I don't enjoy a pun, but that's actually pretty good because it's at the heart of the Mandalorian.
So that's the Star Wars challenge. Can you go anywhere and not see something related to Mandalorians? The answer for me was no, and I was thrilled.
That's great.
How about you? Let's hear your raspy voice adventure.
Yeah, I'm surprised it's not as bad as I woke up this morning and was like, oh, no, we as always record on Mondays. And last night, actually early morning, got back about 2 a.m., got to see the Rolling Stones with our buddy Mark Ellis, another great comic, Tom Rhodes. Grew up watching. He's a big Stones fan, and our pal John Kaiser, who's a character, and we all got to go to SoFi Stadium, which is new stadium out in Inglewood here in LA area, and right next to the Forum. And fascinating. Got to see the Rolling Stones. Well, I mean, amazing. I mean, I could talk about music for a long time. That was a thrill. So I was screaming out all the lyrics that you don't even know, you know, but you just,
and sometimes you don't know if they're the actual words. You're just making sounds. Yeah. Yes. Phonetically. I'm singing along phonetically, but I'm not sure what Mick is saying.
I think I know what Painted Black is about, but I'm singing it. Street Fighting Man, everything, and great time, great show. But my Star Wars connection to it, we walk in, and SoFi is one of those new state-of-the-art stadiums. You get the big one out in Vegas now where the Raiders play. There's other events, and they're impressive, and you know they're a lot of money and all those same kind of things. But this is a beautiful facility. It's got a reflecting pool, so you can reflect on your football team's loss, I guess, if you go there, or the concert that you saw. And it's giant. And we walk in, and John Kaiser, some of you might know him from like movie trivia showdown and stuff, whatever. His dad was a former major league umpire, so we're baseball fan friends. And he turns to me and goes, "Ken, wow, you got to feel like you're walking into the Death Star, yeah? It's huge." And, you know, then me, him, and Ellis were joking for a bit, like, yeah, this was like walking onto the deck of a Star Destroyer. It's a state-of-the-art stadium. Like Ellis said, it's like a fancy hotel and the biggest Apple store in the world just like got together. Like it's all over. It's high tech. And yeah, the superstructure, it felt massive. And we ended up having this conversation about being a stormtrooper on the Death Star and then Ellis was like, you know, would you be aware of what's going on? It's so big. Like, we don't know what's going on the other side of the stadium. Would you be aware if the Empire was doing something bad and you're here? I mean, you got to get plugged in. And it inspired a fun Star Wars conversation where we're walking around before the concert. We did a lap around this level of the stadium we were on, and just I couldn't unsee it like that. It just was now an imperial structure, and we were all gathered in front of a imperial entertainment. But it was a lot of fun, and I love when Star Wars pops up like that. And I love, you know, when you're like this too, Joseph, you're out and about and you're the Star Wars person in that group. It's fun when everyone kind of turns to you like, what do you think about this in Star Wars?
Is this a Death Star? Yeah, that's a nice question. Yeah, that sounds great. And now it makes me really wish that the first song that the Rolling Stones played is their cover of the Imperial March.
They should. It was Street Fighting Man, which was an anti-imperial song, I would think. But it was great.
Yeah. That is so great. The Star Wars adventure and the Rolling Stones adventure. I remember buying Steel Wheels in 1989 thinking, this is probably the last album they'll put out, right?
Gotta get it now. Crazy. And hey, Mick at about 78, oh man, made me feel old running around that stage there. So.
Yeah, that's great. That is great. I'm glad you got to hear the Stones and the Death Star.
There you go. All hail the Stones on the Death Star. We're going to go from Star Wars Life Adventures into Star Wars news. I always say it's a little quieter right now, which always means something big is around the corner, which mid-November, I think we will. But let's talk new tie-in comic book miniseries. Now, there was a rumor out there of a bigger series, a bigger arc coming in 2022, and it looked at it. It was probably a factual rumor, but we like to address things when we actually know it's worth our time because it's official. So some of that news is out there this week, but one of the things that is official is Star Wars Halcyon Legacy. It's a 5-issue series written by Ethan Sachs, drawn by Will Sliney, that covers the adventures and mysteries of the Halcyon Legacy. And I was kind of reading the article going, oh, this is what's so great about this ship. And I got about two paragraphs in. I was like, oh yeah, this is the hotel in Orlando that occasionally I confuse as a cruise ship because it just seems such an event. So this is that story of the hotel. This is the Halcyon Legacy. It's a spaceship, not a hotel. The ship has a 275-year history that began in the High Republic era. In fact, Bur Yaga from the High Republic, the Wookiee Jedi, is on the cover of issue one. Sachs and Sliney worked on the Galaxy's Edge series, the Batuu tie-in, which I thought was interesting. So Joseph, I'm going to start there. What do you think about this particular project? Then we'll talk about tie-in material overall.
Yeah, no, I think this is a great project. I was really happy to see this announced for a couple reasons. Like, this feels like, okay, now we've figured out a little bit of the rhythm of this, of Galaxy's Edge, a real place that you can visit. And they did that that great short run kind of tying into that. So I like that it expands this physical place that is real that you can go to if you can afford it.
Right.
And expands it in ways that are, I think, are fun for both people who can go to these places and people who can't, right? So if you can't go, but you're kind of excited about this idea, of what this Halcyon Legacy ship and idea of cruises in Star Wars, what that represents, then you can spend some time with it in this comic book, which is cool. And then if you ever can or do choose to go to this, then what you've read in the comic book will make that experience even richer. I know I had that experience when I was lucky enough to go to Galaxy's Edge a while back, that having read, you know, some of the books and some of the materials made it feel even more immersive for me. So I think it works really well for people who can go and for people who can't.
Well, wait, that's a great point to start, because I had no thought that I was going to get to Galaxy's Edge in the first 5 years of existence. It's local to us. It's a traffic filled drive down the 5 freeway, but I just, you know, cost and time. And I almost had to mentally disengage for that idea. Right. Like, I'll get there when I get there. I was fortunate enough, a friend actually treated me and Grace, so fortunate to experience. And I experienced exactly what you're talking about, where I was in Doc Ondor's, like, oh, hey, that's this, oh, this and that, and you get a little bit more. But I didn't feel, when the comic came out, I read it, and even the Delilah S. Dawson book, the Black Spire Outpost one, like, I felt connected enough to where I was like, okay, this will be there when I get there. And I'll say this now. No plans on getting to the hotel in Orlando this decade.
Yeah, I'm going to really enjoy these comic books, which I think are going to be slightly less expensive than the actual Halcyon Legacy Adventure.
Yeah. Not rolling in YouTube money like rumors might be out there on the internet. my net worth is not that. So I start there. I think it's a great point, Joseph. Like, they do such a good job, and you can kind of enjoy it and not feel left out if you want to engage with it on this level of Star Wars. That shows to me, it's not just, you can be cynical and say it's marketing material, and it does work like that. Delilah S. Dawson, that one chapter where, you know, Vi Marati's walking around Batuu, literally getting a tour. Like, yeah. But it was done so well that I worked past any cynicism, and it was a fun story, and it's fun as a Star Wars fan.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what was it's like funny to me that, yeah, no, I remember when Vi Marati got the rundown of what drinks are available at the cantina. But that was funny. What was meaningful is, like, when I got to the sort of resistance area of Galaxy's Edge, I'm like, I know the hell that these fictional characters went through to make this a reality. That's what was emotionally, you know, effective. And I think I hope for that with these comics too.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you get this 275 year history, we can now safely, you know, crawl back into the High Republic era and find characters that we already know and already love. And if you do get to go to the hotel, you know, you could be thinking, you know, Buryaga slept here.
Exactly. I want to find his fur in my bed.
Yeah, indeed. And Sax and Sliney, that's a team. They've done this before. So a good reason that they were brought back.
Yeah. And I think in terms of just like the bigger picture, I really love that we're getting to this point now where we can have stories like this that connect the High Republic to other points in the timeline, you know?
Yeah.
And just in general, this idea of a cruise ship, the Halcyon Legacy, is a kind of a fun, nice expansion of just the Star Wars galaxy, right?
Yeah.
And in general, I really like all these locations that have been popping up that are really that they exist over a long period of time, like, you know, Canto Bight and Maz's Castle, Black Spire Outpost, you know, like these types of locations that we can get to know as fans and then know that they exist in different points in the timeline is really fun and makes it feel all connected.
Yeah, I like that little. I'm catching up on Star Wars comics finally. I had a huge stack and it was daunting, and I finally started poking through it. And there's just a real, not subtle, but also for the characters, a subtle reference to High Republic, to the great emergences, the emergences from the hyperspace, I think it launches the whole High Republic era. And I just was like, I felt so smart. I know what you're talking about. But yeah, this lived in history just keeps adding, and it's doing it well. All right. From there, we're going to go to something really fun here. Galaxy of Creatures launched on Star Wars Kids. The droid host SFR3RE is the name, takes us through the Galactic Society of Creature Enthusiasts research and all the creatures in the known galaxy. First two episodes are about porgs and banthas. So, Joseph, no secret, we do love Star Wars kids content, but what do we specifically enjoy about this one?
Yeah, I think it's great to just focus on the creatures. I like that the Star Wars kids different things that they do on YouTube continually shows there's all these different entry points to Star Wars. And like, this is one, honestly, that I appreciate even more because of Jennifer Landa, knowing that Jennifer herself has always appreciated the creatures. And then imagining that, like, when this comes on and I have that personal connection to it of like, Jennifer can show this to her kids and she'll, this is like a perfect entry point. So I like that this is a different entry point with the creatures. And then, you know, for myself, having relatively recently taken a trip to Sequoia and Kings Canyon National Park, and a lot of the stuff there is about getting to know the different wildlife and kids books. And I bought a stuffed animal of a squirrel and a bat and, you know, stamps, you know, to show that you've collected. That mood of this is in the High Republic era and we're going around and collecting knowledge and sharing it. It's just it's got some rhythms with like some good real world stuff of, you know, wanting to go places and learn things, and that knowledge and understanding of the natural world is good. I think that made me really drawn to the setup of this idea.
Yeah, that's a absolutely great message to the youngsters, right? And to the oldsters.
Perhaps more to the oldsters.
Perhaps more to the oldsters. And they were fun. And that's what I love about Star Wars Kids. It is nothing but fun. It is nothing but love for this franchise. Love for this this galaxy of creatures and characters and ships and vehicles and storylines and lessons and boiled down into just fun presentations for people of all ages, for certain. But I just love that we are in this era where Star Wars takes the time to make sure it has this kind of content out. And I enjoy it. And it's, even if it doesn't all strike some deep emotional chord in me, it's fun. And then this one, you know, they presented it a little different. The Porg one is just more of this little story, almost this funny little adventure. I was expecting more of just, this is a Porg, these are its feathers, and and it was cute and endearing with some great facts at the end for both of them there, including one. I didn't really ever pay attention to that Banthas, the length of their horn and their curl of their horn indicates how old they are. See?
I did. We learned a fun fact. Can't wait for that to come up in a trivia contest.
Yeah, absolutely. Why? You mentioned a lot of, I think, the real world importance of paying attention to creatures and the world around us there. But creatures in Star Wars absolutely go hand in hand. Jennifer Landa's right to love creatures in Star Wars. This is a tradition in and of itself here. What do we think about creatures in Star Wars?
I think just like from the very beginning with the first film in 77, I think that the creatures kind of, for me, fall into that great Star Wars charm of being dreamlike, because it has something that is both very familiar and shockingly new and different. So it's like, it is like our world, but not really, you know, so that you can look at different animals and go that, well, it's an elephant thing, but not really. Like that's a dog. Frog, but not, that's a little monkey guy, but not really, you know, like, I think that's what it is that it has that great, like, sense of familiarity. All of the emotions that we have in real life to creatures can kind of translate, everything from fear to love can translate, but it also just feels fun and weird and dreamlike because it's not quite the animals we know.
Yeah. And from the beginning, from seeing the Krat dragon skeleton on the
right,
on the, like, you just immediately are just mesmerized by that world. And I remember the Dewbacks kind of fascinating me and frightening me early, because I was a skittish kid. But Bantz as well, and I've told the story before, but when I was at the Marine World Africa USA down there in San Diego near the San Diego Zoo, and they were like, on the tour, like, that's the elephant from Star Wars. Like, it was like I met Harrison Ford.
Did you try to get a signature?
I mean, I told all my friends at school that I met the elephant from Star Wars. Crazy.
God, the elephant had some real hot takes about what we're filming was actually like.
So there you go. Look for that series. I'm sure we'll get to all creatures. I was going to say, what creatures do you want to see? I'm definitely looking forward to the Wampa one. I do have a special place in my heart for Wampas, which is weird because, again, creature that scared me in Star Wars.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I hope for some good Dianoga content. Oh, you know what I actually liked really on the announcement page, that they are, you know, doing some stuffed animals as well. And the Minoc is beautifully freakish.
Oh, I did. I, you know, I must have, I scrolled past that or something, because that's awesome.
Yeah, because, like, it's great. Hey, it's another cute Porg, cute Bantha, cute Rancor. Great. The attempt to make a Minoc cute with its big sucking mouth. is just delightful. I like cute things that almost defy the ability to be cute. So I might need to pick up that Minoc.
I was just watching the Minoc sequence this morning, poking around, looking at some Yoda Luke stuff for research. And I'm skittish. I'm skittish as an adult. When Leia's like kind of like leaning forward, like what's out there on that. Oh, God, it's really effective. So, yes, I want one of those hang around my house. All right. From Galaxy of Creatures, we're going to go to some Star Wars speculation. We always say, you know, we love pulling away from spoiler talk or what's coming up in upcoming shows and rumors. But the Kenobi series has just proven that you and I, Joseph, have a little weak spot for Kenobi speculation. We just love talking.
Oh, yes. Yes. Kenobi fever.
So, Kumail, it's Kumail versus Kenobi. A great title for this segment. Kumail Nanjiani is the great comedian, writer, and actor. He is in Kenobi, which I was going to start this discussion off, Joseph, saying, hey, remember, he's in Kenobi. There's a full functioning cast we don't really even talk about yet. We just focus on good old Kenobi, you know?
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, we had a great time breaking down that cast when it was first announced, and just a ton of great people and heavy hitters and things like Kumail's casting, which on one hand, if you know him like I do more from comedy, you know, you can be like, wow. But then like, yeah, no, we're recording is the premiere of The Eternals. He's playing a superhero. So it makes perfect sense. So, yeah, I'm very excited.
Yeah, very excited indeed. And he was speaking with Rolling Stone, which I don't have the paid subscription, so thanks to our fine friends at Star Wars News Net, I was able to read kind of the summary of this stuff there. I used to get the Rolling Stone in the magazine there, all right, but I don't get that in the mail. He said a bunch of things here. I want to highlight some of them, Joseph. We'll just dive in, and feel free to just take this wherever you want to go, my friend. He says, we haven't seen this exact thing in Star Wars yet. He was talking about kind of being recruited by Deborah Chow, and he basically was like, look, I'm on board, whatever. He was trying to sell him on this character. He says, we haven't seen this exact thing in Star Wars before. This is like a new version of a type of Star Wars character we've seen before. So familiar, again, new and old, all wrapped into one. It's Star Wars in the modern era. I've seen droid. The Kitster stuff might be out the window at this point, but I don't know. Could be Kitster the scoundrel, and now we get a different version of it there. What do you think about just that statement?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think kind of everything he says ties into some of the wild speculation. I think for me, can go over a couple of other quotes, but just to get to the heart of the matter in terms of the wild speculation, I still feel like a lot of the characters that we could meet are characters that Kenobi needs to facilitate his journey, right? Because I don't think he's just, you know, Vader's coming to Tatooine, and I don't think he's just popping up onto a Star Destroyer in Tatooine's atmosphere. I think Kenobi is going on a journey to confront Vader is my suspicion, hope, conjecture. So I'd like imagining if Kumail Nanjiani is saying that he interacts with Kenobi, he gets intimidated by Kenobi. It's actually a larger part with a lot of interaction with Kenobi.
Right.
That makes me think that maybe he is one of the key characters that has to facilitate the journey. So I have two wild guesses, Ken.
Okay.
For a character that we're familiar with, but this is a new twist. Either a lower level Imperial who agrees to help Kenobi navigate toward Vader, or a pilot scoundrel type who is not the cool swagger of Han and Lando, but a little bit more comedic, grounded, down to earth.
Ooh, okay. Yeah, because I was going that scoundrel route, but I like that. Yeah, because you mentioned the Eternals. You know, he's done a lot of great acting, but the Portlandia stuff of him always pops up to mind of being the birthday loan accountant at the bank. Like his style is so unique, and I'm not expecting that beat for beat in Star Wars, but that's a strength, and that could be something completely different. But in something there, I the Imperial things, like are you thinking like an Imperial with a heart of gold? Is this a Bodhi Rook type or to a different? I like this train of thought, too.
I think the journey to Bodhi is a possibility for me. He's somebody who is sort of trapped in the Imperial system and doesn't really know what it is, right?
Right.
That kind of thing is interesting to me. Part of that thought came from this other quote. Do you mind if I read it?
Do it.
Kamal says, the first scene we shot, it was Star Wars outside the windows with aliens walking around and ships flying by and all this stuff. But the rest of it just looked like a warehouse. Then a little later, he says, the only thing that was real in the whole room was the desk I was sitting at. It was wild. It was really, really exciting. I love shooting like that because you don't have to pretend that you're on a spaceship flying through space. It really feels like you're in a spaceship flying through space.
Right.
So part of it was, for me, was that image of at a desk, right? That he is somebody who is, you know, not you know, commanding a Star Destroyer or a light interceptor or whatever, but like he's on a cargo ship.
Yeah.
You know, just that real lower level. I'm just checking off boxes, you know.
Just there for
nobody either mind tricks him or, you know, talks him into taking him along on the journey or whatever, that kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. Or bullies him into it. I don't know. Yeah. The being intimidated by Kenobi, which means either, you know, who Kenobi is or he's doing something to you, presenting something to you. That's interesting too. Yeah. Helping and being, having a significant role is great to hear. I think he's a unique presence in Star Wars. So yeah, I'm so bad at speculation, but I do like and again, I go to what I've seen before in a lot of comedy stuff with him, but just like if he's at a desk and he's being smushed by the drudgery of day-to-day imperial bureaucracy, that could be something fun too to play with.
Yeah, yeah. And I think just for his on-screen experience, you know, obviously one of his big breaks, he's had many breaks. He's multi-talented, but the film he wrote with his wife, The Big Sick, is a great mixture of comedy and then true like depth and pain, because it's about, you know, becoming a partner with someone as they're going through this massive sickness and the weirdness of that based on his real life experiences with his wife. So kind of translating some of those acting chops and what that would mean in the story of Kenobi. Mm. And I wouldn't go to any of this conjecture if it wasn't that comment that it's actually a pretty large role. I wonder if that this character, whatever he is, could be on a practical level facilitating Kenobi's journey, but someone who can add like comedy and levity because they're like a little in over their head to balance out, you know, Kenobi maybe not being in emotionally the best place.
Right, right.
But then also someone who could bring some sort of a pathos and sadness and truth about being trapped in the Imperial system, either because they're like a real struggling scoundrel type, not a cool flashy one like Han and Lando, but just somebody who is comically struggling to get by, but also very sadly struggling to get by because of the horrors of the Empire, or somebody who is low level Empire, doesn't particularly like it, but this is the government, this is reality. So a character who could both add some levity to what might be a heavier show, but then also within that comedy have it be truly coming from a place of a character that it could exemplify to Kenobi, here's how the just day-to-day citizens of the galaxy are suffering because of this horror. And I really think Kamal Nanjiani has the chops to bring both.
Yeah, I second that. Yeah, scoundreling because he has to might be enough.
Yeah.
I like that idea. But yeah, that the and showing again what the Empire is doing and which might spurn Kenobi to take actions or something like that. A lot of ways to go with that there. But we're going to find out soon enough.
Yeah.
Soon enough.
Or all of this is wrong. And yeah, he's a droid.
And he's a wisecracking droid. Wait, we've seen that. Maybe it's a depressed droid. Hey, we've seen that. No, I've seen the droid stuff out there too. I don't think that's the case, but there's gotta be a droid in the show though, right?
Oh, I'm sure there'll be a couple. Yeah.
That Kenobi treats bad.
Yeah. Yeah. His last droid that he had in the Clone Wars, R4G9, finds him.
That's what this whole show is. That's the rematch of the century. So
Vader's in it, but Kenobi's actually fighting his old droid.
That's perfect.
People will be very happy with that.
Yeah. Like I said, we'll find out soon enough. We don't know quite when. We're speculating on that even. But hey, you know what? I've already made some plans for 2022. So have all of you. We are almost there. The year of Star Wars 2022 and 2023 and beyond. A lot of Star Wars coming our way here. We're going to be covering it all here on Force Center. As always, when some Kenobi speculation presents itself, we'll dive on in here. That, Joseph, is a look at Star Wars news. What do we have for an audiobook recommendation?
We are recommending Ronin by Emma Miko Kanden, a book based on expanding the story of the duel in Star Wars Visions.
Yes, we do. Download that today. You get your free audiobook on us by going to audibletrial.com/ForceCenter. Again, that's audibletrial.com/ForceCenter for your free audiobook. We're going to take a quick break. On the other side, we got some wonderful questions from all of you here on ForceCenter.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at Burrow.com/ACAST, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/ACAST.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome back to Force Center, the big show, the main show, the superstar story of our fleet, episode 367 in an ongoing series that just speculates on Kenobi. We've got some wonderful questions. We can't do the Q's without all of you's. So, Joseph, what do we got?
Yeah, we got two questions from Twitter and two questions from patrons on Patreon. As always, I don't think any of the questions are directly about Kenobi, but we could make them about Kenobi if we need to, Ken. First question comes from Twitter and Commander Cloud. Commander Cloud says, imagine that you and your significant other suddenly found yourselves living in the Star Wars galaxy. What work would you do to provide? Would you stay in your professions or try something new? How would your partner hold up? Where and when would you prefer to live? Thanks, guys. Thank you, Commander Cloud, for the question. And I think how would your partner hold up is just that's a fun question to ask just in real life of our partners living with us as we constantly talk about Star Wars. Luckily, they both like Star Wars, too. Anyway, Ken, where do you go with this? If you and Grace were living in the Star Wars galaxy, when and what would you do?
Yeah, that's a great way to look at it. I think we would be on Coruscant based just on the fun we had in New York and how much we both love New York, but Grace specifically loves the buzz of the city. So I think we'd be there. The air is different because I think there's part of me now that would look at the High Republic, which is an interesting time to be there. and not necessarily in the best way based on Out of the Shadows, like we just read. And I'd rather be there and have a little time to enjoy it than the impending fall of the Republic. And then after that, it seems like Coruscant is not the shining star it once was there. Everything kind of moves off to Chandrila and beyond. So I think I'll say late High Republic era. And I think she would want to be still in her profession, you know, a performer on the Holo movies and the Holo shows, maybe do some singing and stuff too. Maybe we were late enough in the High Republic where a young, you know, Lulu Primock is there. Singing alongside her. I think that could work too. Grace could sing as well as an act.
Allegedly, according to the Visual Dictionary, he also puts on an exosuit and acts, so he could do a dramatic Holo.
There you go. Maybe they do a road picture. yeah, be good. And as far as me, like, I've always joked before, like, you know, I'd be a uniform, you know, kind of a make Jedi robes and sell them, uniform kind of guy. Near the temple in Coruscant, because I think it'd be a good growth business during that era. So I guess I could stay in that regard. You know, I guess I could do a low level, you know, podcast show or something there. But really, I'm not trying to ride her coattails, but I think she'd be so good at it, surviving and thriving. I'd probably take a job. What becomes Dexter's Diner? my first job ever was a dishwasher in a care center. So I got some dishwasher and diner experience. I'll sit there and just kind of, you know, float around the city, which is what I love to do when I'm in New York. Just walk and feel the vibe and, you know, take a speeder and go around. As far as would my partner hold up, she would exceed. She would exceed.
What if you discovered, now, I don't think we've heard about these in Star Wars canon. We've heard a lot about holovids over the all the different eras of Star Wars. Clearly, Star Wars just has a thriving television show, the holo books we read about, lots of pop culture talking. I don't think we've heard about audio-only holos, which I would think are Star Wars podcasts. Would you want to introduce the Galaxy Far, Far Away to podcasts?
I think I would love to do that. And then later on, you know, again, I'm putting in High Republic era, so I don't want to get too far away from that choice. But like whatever Lando ends up doing, the Lando Calrissian Chronicles, like producing shows like that where, you know, let me inspire future creators to come into my studio at an hourly Republic credit rate, of course, and record there. Yeah, I think that would work.
Oh, fair enough. Fair enough. Yes, you're very, very right. Lando he's recording a video though, right?
It's video. Yeah, it's a video. Everyone's pivoting to video. It's a huge mistake. Huge mistake.
Facebook lied to Lando about video too, right?
Yeah.
we have some great similarities here in our answers. I would definitely want to go to Coruscant as well, because I'm just kind of used to being a big city person. Yeah. I would go to Coruscant post-Exegol, the Battle of Exegol, the success of the Resistance. Don't know in canon exactly the condition of Coruscant at that point, but I think there's something about it. If I literally was some magic thing where I was transported into this world, I don't want to be doomed by or cursed with future knowledge, right?
Right.
There's just something about it. I don't want to be there like, oh, how many years until everything goes to bleep, you know?
Right. Yeah.
So there's something about I like just like the future is wide open. Coruscant might not be in the best shape when we get there. We don't know. But the future is wide open. My wife has so many different skills and talents and things that she's done as a job. But one of the big things that she's done is run historic house museums, historic houses that have an element of history, an element of sort of tourism, and then also performance held within that. Great at doing all sorts of that management. So I would hope that after all of the events of the sequel trilogy, at this time, the Jedi Temple, once the, you know, Imperial Temple during the era, was a museum to educate and entertain, but mostly to educate about here's the real history. Here's what really went down. Let's listen to Luke. Let's not, these characters are legends, or these people are legends and their inspirations. But they're also real people who had real challenges. Let's really, embrace that. And then, you know, she could hire me as a, an actor to dress up as Jedi and do little shows.
Yes.
Little historical shows, which I've done in the past at museums as a job. I've been asked. I didn't just start doing it at museums. People hired me and paid me.
Sir, this is a museum. That's great. Then you'd have to grow the Jedi beard back, of course, right?
I would. I would have no choice. Yeah. So I would do that as my, like, that's my steady job. And then I think I would try to, you know, maybe write and produce some holovids. You know, I'd be lucky if I was able to cast your partner, Grace, and, yes, and the holovids I would try to produce. But I'm sure it's a difficult industry to get into.
I'm sure it's tough. And, but then, end of the day, you and I will just meet at the Outlander Club and watch some Nuna Ball and have a drink.
Yep,
coming Jedi,
and it'll be great. And if we did a podcast, it would be about what's happening back on Earth.
Yes, that's right. Yes,
planet. Got some breaking Earth news.
Yeah.
Love it. This is a great question, Commander Cloud. Thank you very much. Any other thoughts before we move on, Ken?
No. That's this is. There was even no hesitation when I saw this question come across. That's right where I'd be. So great.
Yeah. Stuff. Coruscant. There we go. Moving on to our next question from Twitter from Le Batard F. this person asks, you get complete control to make a movie or series, could be a saga or multiple seasons or just a one-time deal. It could be canon, legends, whatever. What's the series about and who's your main character or group? So we are going to answer this question, but first, a caveat. We've been getting a decent amount of questions like this lately about pitches for shows that haven't happened yet. And it's kind of one thing to talk about like Kenobi, that is a show that has already happened and we're guessing what's going to happen, but it's written. It's done. So we don't mind really kind of giving pitches for things like that. For total pie in the sky future things, we can talk very generally, which we're going to do about this, but we kind of can't do full pitches in general. There's been some great Twitter threads about this recently from writers. It's in general for everyone, not even working writers, it's not great to put out whole pitches out into the world because it opens the doors to potential claims of stealing ideas, you know, and it happens a lot that nobody steals an idea, but people have similar ideas and it opens the door of possibility of somebody down the line going, hey, we both tweeted this idea or both said this idea on a podcast. And then one day somebody went off and made it. And now there's this tension. So in general, it's better to keep your pitches kind of in closed doors for big stuff like that. And then I think both for you and I, Ken, we are at different stages of actually pitching stuff. So for myself, I don't mind talking in generalities, but like detailed, here's the exact character, beginning, middle, and end. Here's my full pitch. You know, I want to save that for the opportunity, should it ever occur, to actually pitch it.
Yeah, no. Well said. And it's just kind of the reality, and especially of our shows and fields and the path you're specifically on there too. Especially I used to compete in some of those weird shows where you fight about movies, and I go into detailed pitches, and some of them I liked, but then once they're out, they're out.
Yeah. And you know, yeah, there's that line between like weird joking and spitballing versus, hey, here's an idea I actually really liked, and given the opportunity, I would truly pitch it. In that case, I think it is much better if anybody who writer or not, anybody, if it's an idea that you really like and really think someday I would really like to officially pitch this to the right people, probably not a great idea to put it out into the world. Yeah. Awesome. Any other follow-ups on that, Ken?
No. Well said.
Okay, great. Well said. In that case, then let's just talk in a general way to address this question about if you were going to get into Star Wars, is there a general character or era or thing that you would be attracted to having a hand in creating?
So this question, if you get complete control to make movie or series, I've said a lot of things, Infus Nest, Ray Sloan, Chief Chirpa, the story of Chirpa. These are all things I really mention a lot because I'd love to see him, and I'm not moving off of that, but something about that first sentence, you get complete control. If I'm in that position, I'm like, let's finally do this. Let's go back to where we were rumored to go at one point. Maybe it was Benioff and Weiss were going to do it. I don't know. Let's go back to the start of the Jedi Order. Let's go back to some of the early Sith and Jedi stuff because I want to see it, but also I just want to get it out there. And I'm not saying I would hire you and others, Joseph. I would just be like, if I had complete control, we're making this. So we're done talking about this. And I mean in a positive way, though. But I mean it in a positive way.
But you would be there doing your impression of an old timey producer going, you have Go Picture, right? You want to make this happen.
You got Go Picture. Let's go figure it out at the beginning. Let's. I'm not even saying old Republic. I've always been intrigued by the start of the Jedi Order. You know, but the Force exists before that. And who are these folks that come along and decide to go Team Force, Team Light Side? What is it about? And naturally, someone out of that might fall and then arise the Sith. So I'm interested in it. I'm very interested. I don't want to sound like I'm dismissing it. Like, oh, fine, eye roll, let's do it. But I've just always kind of been that way. Because again, I didn't play Knights of the Old Republic. I'm not connected to that game or those stories. I read one of the Bane novels from the, and I was like, it's great, it's good. And then the new era of modern canon started, and I just got pulled off those books. So I want those answers too. I'm fascinated by them because the history exists. That's why I do love the High Republic, but you know, we're only 200 years prior and it's a different era, and they're accomplishing something very different. So if I got the complete control, that's what I'm green lighting.
I like that. You're a great producer. I want to work with you. I agree with that. I would definitely love to see something that is truly in the era of many, many Jedi and many Sith, a war, a conflict. I think that would be great. The other thing that I've really brainstormed on and feel really passionate about are ideas about just a handful of Jedi on a mission. Mm. That's something that I think we have seen in books and comics. And something I'd really love to see on screen, something that's really about who the Jedi are, yeah, and Jedi as individuals and their challenges, and not tied to some huge stake, but something that's, hey, you've been sent to solve a problem and it's really causing you to face these issues. I feel like the High Republic is doing a great job of this. I feel like, film in Star Wars Visions, The Elder, that was really just like, here's a master and a Padawan, and we're learning about them as they face a specific challenge. If I had the opportunity to pitch something, I would pitch something like that with brand new Jedi characters.
Love it.
Just facing an issue and really focusing, much like the High Republic is doing, but for the screen, on Jedi being forced to face themselves as they deal with a challenge.
Love it. Love it. Or we could just both pitch the Dawn of the Caretakers. And it's the story of Lene on Octo.
Exactly. Big full pitch. Molekeely and Rolekeely's childhood with their third twin, Dolekeely.
And they run into Bib and Beezer Fortuna.
Exactly. Just Star Wars family buddies. Very, very fun question. Thank you very much. We're going to move on to our questions from our patrons on Patreon. We've got one from our friend Alden Diaz. Alden says, hey, friends. I was wondering if you could provide a bit of Star Wars counseling and debate analysis for me and a friend of mine. Let me sit at your bar for a round and tell you all about this disagreement. I was expressing to a friend why Finn's Force sensitivity in The Rise of Skywalker really enhances several moments for me in the previous two films in the sequel trilogy. I found a lot of soulful mythic implications with that knowledge adding context. On the other hand, my friend expressed that they really didn't like the Force sensitivity reveal because they felt it took away the agency of Finn's choice on Jakku. They said it wasn't as much about him refusing to fire on villagers, but the Force pushing him in the right direction. To them, it makes him more of a passenger for the cosmic narrative and not the eyes in young character making the choice. We went back and forth a bit and ultimately came down to me saying that I think this all just depends on how you feel about the Force, free will, and predestination. I cited Luke in Empire by saying Luke's visions that make him want to leave immediately to help Han and Leia don't change the fact that he's the kind of young man that would help his friends. He's still that guy, even if he got the mystical signal. Where do you stand on all of this push and pull? Is there a middle ground that I could express should it come up again for Finn or any other character? Drinks, writes Alden. I will drink too. Sadly, just coffee because we're recording in the morning. But this is a great imaginary bar to be at, Ken. Yeah. Where do you go with all this?
Wow. Wow. Yeah, I love these discussions. And Alden, I can already tell you're a better human than me. Cause sometimes I've gotten these deep discussions and I smile and laugh and I walk away and I mute them on Twitter. And I'm saying I'm the bad guy. And that's but this is a great discussion. And I think, Joseph, I think we both would kind of want to start this idea of acknowledging that, you know, Star Wars has a history of what I call kind of layering new information over old information. And
that's a very good way to say that.
Yeah. Sometimes it works like a piece of I love Japanese woodblock print art and just the making of it. If you ever watch like a video, you can watch them on YouTube. It's beyond impressive. It's mind-boggling, just every layer and how, you know, if you stopped at each layer, it's like, oh, a picture of a sunset. Oh, no, it's a picture of birds, ocean. Oh, no, it's two samurai fighting. Oh, my gosh, this is an entire scene, right? And it's art, and it takes time to make, and I love it. I have no patience to do that kind of art, but I'm mesmerized by people watching it. And then other times, it just feels like the paint is splattered against a wall. And I think you and I want to acknowledge that not liking the end result is perfectly fine. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, man, I don't know how you want to dive into this, Joseph. I guess we can go beat by beat. I don't know. What do you feel? I've thought.
Yeah. Well, let's start with a kind of big picture and then get specifically into the Finn moment and comparisons there. I think that this is a great discussion to have. I think that Star Wars invites this discussion. I think this is about our, like Alden said, about our personal interpretation of what Star Wars has to say at different moments or overall about free will and agency. I think it also goes to which characters do you trust? Which characters do you believe? Because Star Wars does have a lot to say about the Force guiding us. You know, Obi-Wan saying, you know, it guides us, but it also obeys our commands. And that's a real sort of practical application of like, the skills, right? Of you can just let the Force take over and you find yourself moving your lightsaber to block it, or you can reach out and command the blaster fire to move away, right? But there's so many discussions of, you know, Qui-Gon saying, you know, nothing happens by accident. Everything is the will of the cosmic force. Justina Ireland's Test of Courage. It's a real point where all of these young people who just lost elders, parents and mentors are wondering why something that awful could ever happen. And how do they square that with the will of the Force, you know? So I think that this is a great thing to wrestle with. I think it should be wrestled with. And I also think it's okay if there isn't, you know, an answer. I don't think Wikipedia is ever going to have the answer of like, here's the entry on, or Wikipedia is ever going to have the answer of here's the entry on will of the Force. And here's the truth.
Yeah.
This is huge philosophical debates that the characters have. So I just want to start from that perspective that I think this is a great thing to think about and a great thing to debate about and a great thing to not necessarily have a 100% firm opinion on in the big picture because it is so big and so prevalent throughout Star Wars. What are your thoughts about just the big picture of, you know, these questions of free will and destiny and agency in Star Wars?
Yeah, I think sometimes we might as well call this podcast Choice Center because we love exploring the choices and we don't want to beat that drum until no one hears that pounding anymore. But I still believe it was Finn's choice because of that and where you kind of look at the Force. And I think Alden's correct to say, hey, that might just be at the end of the day, your view and your interpretation of the Force might be where you land on this discussion. And I think you're right to point out, Joseph, that it's wonderful to have these discussions. That's part of what Star Wars is and part of what being Star Wars friends are. So I go, and I think I've mentioned this before, but I oddly, it's the Force, so it's spiritual, but I go a little biblical here. There's Luke 19:40 in the Bible of Jesus says, if they remain silent, the stones will cry out. And I think the Force, living or cosmic, wasn't pushing Finn to me. I think Force was kind of saying, hey, what do you feel about this? What do you look at what's going on here? Because there's a lot going on. And Finn runs away. We know a lot of his journey is running away. It's not necessarily picking up and joining the resistance at that moment. He does that maybe a little bit later on, not unlike Han at many points. But so I still go to that where Finn to me could have stayed. And I know maybe I'm focusing here on Finn already, Joseph.
Oh, that's fine. That's fine.
For the big picture. But he could have stayed lockstep with the First Order in that moment. And I think the Force would have tried again with him. Think Vader, Return of the Jedi to me. Hey, Anakin, you in there? You in there, Anakin? It's another choice. Or the Force would have maybe continued to find others too that when presented with this choice, what are you going to do with it? And that to me connects with this idea of it's a feeling. And then that breaks down to the micro level we've discussed a lot lately of the light side, the dark side, fear versus hope, these big concepts that run through everything. It isn't all about cloaks and space wizards and laser swords. It's, you know, are you going to fudge that report? Because if you are, Palpatine might be interested in you. If you're able to lie on that small level and choose the dark side in that moment, or, you know, are you going to look at these villagers and think this ain't right, then, you know, Kylo's got some problems with you and maybe the light side has some interest in you, you know, not that they're drafting a fantasy team here. So jumping around a bit, I don't think Finn's choice is now any lesser than Rey letting the Force into her to guide her in that first fight with Kylo Ren, right? Like, yeah. There's a point of choice too, where she was holding her own. She might've been losing that moment. Kylo has an advantage. And that's when the words of Maz kind of come in and the Force guides her. That's a choice. Maybe it's not a one-to-one comparison. But I think that's some of how the Force works for me. I believe the Force kind of both chooses people with great importance while also surrounds all of us. The luminous being speech, right? And yeah. So therefore we all might have access to it in some way, which is a little bit what George has said before. What was that story of, it's like basketball. We all could play it. Some just have more natural skills to play it better, but you can get on that court and you can choose to kind of learn as much as you can to dribble that ball, but it's there for you. Some are just naturally better at it. I remember that conversation about how we'd be the Force. That's kind of my overall stuff. And I have a little bit more, but I want to kick it back to you.
Yeah, well, that is very deep, very great stuff. But I have to be honest, all I can picture now is Sheev just crushing people at basketball. All by himself. Just, you know, it's Sheev against like 80 rebels and he just dominates at basketball.
Just dribbling between his legs with the cloak on, with the big robe on, just like, come on, do it. Take the ball. One-on-one.
Yeah, he dribbles into his cloak and the ball just disappears. Yeah. And reappears above the hoop somehow. Like, how do you even do that? It's so unnatural.
He's dunking, but he's not even leaving the ground.
Anyway, a brief break in our very serious conversation to talk about Sheev Ball. Yeah. I really agree with you. I think it's for myself, and I don't need anyone to agree with me because I think these are, like, really, like I said, the very big ideas, and I think they attach very much to real life spiritual beliefs. So I think this is a conversation for me to always be very generous and delicate about. You know, this isn't what is, you know, Padme's blaster in Phantom Menace. There's not a right or wrong. You know, there's lots of room for debate. So for me, you and I have talked about it a lot on the podcast, but the way a lot of this makes sense to me is that this idea that the Force might push you toward a decision that you are going to need to make, but it is still your decision. So the Force might be involved and destiny might be involved. And I think sometimes that destiny can break down in terms of real life terms to, you know, an issue with your parents, you know, that you're going to have to address this issue between you and your parents, you know, that's because that's a part of your life, you know, or if you have a specific talent, you know, it's going to come up for an opportunity for you to use it or not, you know, and you're going to choose whether to use it. Very specifically about this, about whether in that sort of moment, if the Force is responsible or if Finn is responsible. The way I think about that particular moment is, for me, Star Wars has just such a long history of encouraging you to listen to your instincts and your intuition. I've talked about how much the lessons of the Force helped me in various artistic pursuits, from drumming to improv to shut off the really critical brain and just listen to instinct in intuition. And I have already learned all these skills, and it turns out I have the knowledge, you know, inside me, kind of thing. In that way, for me, the Force is often a metaphor for instinct. So when I think about that moment for Finn, I kind of think about like that. Like that moment, the Force is like this gut feeling saying, this is wrong. So what are you going to choose to do? And the choice for me is like that instinct that just goes, wrong, wrong, wrong. You know, somehow, somewhere in your bones, this is wrong. And maybe because of your connection to the Force, you felt that stronger. And that's what, you know, is special in that moment for Finn. But we know it also happened to Janna in all of Company 77, that they all decided not to fire on civilians at the Battle of Ansett Island. So for me, it ultimately, I think I do agree with Alden's take. It doesn't take away from Finn, because it's not like just something washed over him and he shook his head and said, what happened?
Right.
I think to me, it's this deep instinct of this is wrong. Are you going to have the strength to disobey your training, you know, to take this risk in that moment and listen to that instinct? I think so much of Star Wars is always about choice. And you know, you can go down the list and you can make a long, a long essay of examples of choice. Characters say a lot of things about will of the force, it's destiny, all this stuff. But at the end of the day, in moments, crucial moments in films, characters make choices. And I think this is a moment where Finn is making the choice to listen to that instinct.
How much of that? Yeah, right with you. Well said on that. And we talk about his kind of connection to Leia. He has that line in Rise of Skywalker that's just kind of like, you know, Leia and I get it. Poe, you don't get it. I'm paraphrasing there, but I think of Leia in Empire, right? Who is kind of sitting there in a dream state, but kind of has this thought of we've got to go back. She's not tapped into the force. She's not there. She chooses to say those words. She chooses to in a way stand up for Luke in that moment and save Luke. I think I connected a little bit there. Again, is it 1-to-1? I don't know. Not necessarily, but I see force Finn's relationship with the force being more on that side of it. Right. Versus here's Emmanuel. You've been plucked to join this academy. Rey clearly has, whether she's, you know, the Rey from Nowhere stuff and all this, she's still chosen for some great stuff if she so chooses, and just like Anakin, just like Luke, some people got that. They're great with a three-pointer, right? And Finn might have to, his skills are elsewhere. And I think so. I look at that. I think his connection to the Force is represents a lot of what Yoda was talking about on Dagobah. A lot about it binds all of us. It's there. And it maybe even a little bit the Qui-Gon stuff too. So I don't know. Do you think it connects at all to that Leia moment?
Yeah, no, I think that's another great moment of, you know, yeah, it's almost like a separate thing to wrestle with that. I know sometimes people, you know, feel like, well, hey, if the characters who are attached to the Force, they have this sort of bonus to succeed, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's a whole debate and a philosophy. But yeah, absolutely. You know, Leia and Finn are both connected to the Force. I think they're shown to be connected to the Force in a very similar way, which is this very flowing, intuitive way. And yeah, that moment is, Luke is calling out to her, their connection through the mystical force, the living force, allows Leia to hear that call. She chooses to answer it, you know, and against all these moments have of choice aren't just like, you know, something's telling me to turn left. I'll just turn left. There's always someone or something going, of course you should turn right. You know, literally Lando saying, the hell are you talking about? No, yeah. You know. With Finn, that's an incredibly dangerous thing that he immediately pays for, and he has to run from, from the First Order because of that choice. Right. There's always a pushback of you could take the, more expected path, the more rigid path. You could take the path that's dominated by fear and control, or you could choose to listen to this instinct. You know, and for non-Force users, I just feel it's so embedded in Star Wars. I think it's so important that Han's story in A New Hope, right? And Leia even highlighting it when Luke says, I just, you know, it's just Han. And Leia says, like, he has to follow his own path. No one can choose it for him. And he listens to his instinct, his gut, his truth, the facts that, you know, he knows what they're up against, and he makes that choice. And Luke, the special kid, is maybe the only one who could make that shot, but he would never make it if Han hadn't made that choice. And that's for me where it just feels like to me, like the overall perspective of Star Wars is agency matters, choice matters over everything.
I agree with that. And again, that's what I say, the Force will find a way, I guess, and still give many different people choices if they need to, I guess. But that's my interpretation of it there. You mentioned the Han thing too, and I want to talk about this as well. For me, and this almost to address anyone who might have issues with this or any other part of Star Wars. And again, Rise of Skywalker shows up and is like, hey, we got some information for you that's new all through the movie. And another one, the Palpatine part was in debate again this week on Twitter. I saw for a second of a lot of people poking fun at the somehow Palpatine came back line, which I agree is not my favorite line in Star Wars either. You and I have discussed it, how it opened up the debate real easily. It is what it is. But Rise of Skywalker shows up and goes, hey, here's some new information to layer over. And Pablo Hidalgo tweeted out recently a lot of stuff. I don't follow him because this time around, because I want to, you know, stop myself from the heartbreak when he deletes everyone again. But he said something about Terrio did his homework. He did his homework. And so when you layer a lot over it, I think it connects in some beautiful ways. But all that to say, if you're still at the end of the day, not happy with some of the Palpatine stuff, not happy with some of the Raid stuff, it's very personal. And we're not here to take that away from you. We're not here to say you're wrong. The name of the blaster is,
yeah,
you know, like you said earlier, Joseph. But parts of the journey of Finn or any character to me can still mean what it meant to you then in that moment while the story can continue to grow. You mentioned the Han moment. I'm a big Han guy. Based a lot of my life on Han. Han saving Luke in A New Hope. But then immediately running away at Empire doesn't change episode 4 for me, right?
Yeah.
When we meet him again, he's like, I'm out of here. I got to go. And that doesn't, to me, and it's not necessarily a Force-related question, but it doesn't. You know, the fist pumping inspiration I picked up from episode 4 from Han doesn't quickly vanish because the story continues. And I think if you were moved by Finn's choice in episode 7, I think you can still be moved by that choice and live in that moment and enjoy that moment. And some of the stuff with Rey, other properties where bad things happen to characters or characters make choices later on that maybe upset you because you love the character. I don't want it to, it's sometimes going to be impossible not to feel that way, but if a character in season 3 inspired you but hurt you later on, that inspiration in season 3 is still there for you to engage with. And I think some of the stuff with Finn, it's similar to Han and Leia is the love story of my generation. And then they're separated when I see them again. and I got more out of that because the story continues to grow and you as a fan will continue to grow. I think you'll get more out of Finn's journey later on where there's a little bit of like, I had this instinct, had this feeling, I made a choice and then spent a lot of time running away or not fully understanding the choice until later. And mm-hmm. I did that. And you'll look back in your life and go, why did I do that? And look where I always say, you know, what Star Wars is about, the hope of tomorrow being present today. You're already on your journey. That's one of the ways I look at Star Wars. And so Finn can now look back and go, I didn't quite understand it, but I know my journey was already beginning. Where I am now started then. And I still think you can take a lot out of those moments.
I totally agree. And I think for me, that's what's one of the many things that's powerful about the sequel trilogy is that Finn and Rey in particular are these people who are empathetic. That appears to be their nature. And in Force Awakens, they both have moments where the gut instinct, be it a nudge from the Force or their upbringing or their DNA or whatever you choose to believe or interpret where that nudge came from, they make choices of empathy. You know, Finn won't fire. Rey helps BB-8. Rey could sell BB-8 for those 60 portions that she is starving for. But she has empathy for another lost soul waiting for their people to return, the same as her. They both have those moments of empathy that kick them into the adventure, but then they resist the call. Then they go, okay, we'll help. We helped in that moment, but then we got to get back to our own thing and stay in the boxes that we think we're supposed to be in. Right. Mm-hmm. And the story of the sequel trilogy is them, you know, accepting the call and saying, oh, just like you just said, Ken, that moment of empathy, that's the arrow pointing me to who I want to be, what active choices I want to make, you know, it is really for me the beginning point of both of them realizing those early choices of empathy I made on this journey. That's who I want to be. And that's what I'm going to fight for. And, you know, they're committed in Rise of Skywalker and trying to hold on.
Yeah, I love that you mentioned the Rey and the BB-8 stuff and the portions. That's a great instinct moment, right? And what you're saying, there's always someone to go choose right, choose door number two, 60 portions of food. But even beyond that, the fixing of the antenna, but just hearing the calls of BB-8 and not leaving this wailing droid to Tito is a great point of choice for her. That's just instinct because it's in her, but I could argue that it's also the Force going, this is probably a droid you need to talk to. But it's, to me, goes what you just talked about. At the core of the light side are things like compassion, empathy, and going towards the light because it's there.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, and that ties directly to, you know, Luke saying that Leia and himself believed in her and didn't worry about the Palpatine thing because they saw her spirit, her heart, you know?
Yeah.
In that implication there for me that there's a real connection similarly between Finn and Leia in that regard. So I think for me it's powerful as a metaphor, an analogy, because the Force can kind of be a metaphor for lots of different things. The Force doesn't need to be just seen as an external force to, you know, cause it's a part of us, you know, so even if it is the Force, speaking to Finn, that he is a part of that, you know, it is the entire, you know, connected, reality of existence. He's a part of that. It's not necessarily just an external thing. And for me, that also can be a metaphor for real life, where you're about to do something and you kind of know you shouldn't. Is that because of previous life experience? Is that kind of wisdom from elders? Is that some deep instinct where of empathy? That's where it really gets into faith and different modes of belief and spirituality of where some of those voices come from. But I think we all know that we've had moments like Finn where like, I know everything around me, all of the structures around me are telling me this is what I am supposed to do, but I have this instinct that it's wrong and it's hurtful. Mm. And then you choose whether you listen or not.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's that little voice inside.
Yeah. Final thing for me is I think in some ways, I also think about that Finn moment is being a smaller, more subtle moment in The Force Awakens. But it's very much like Luke's moment in A New Hope when he has the choice between a targeting computer and an old ghost whispering in his ear to trust his gut, right? That's just like for me the most pure, like it's instinct, you know. It's do you trust the rigid computer that has already shown that it actually can't make that shot, or do you trust this sort of this flowing, organic, intuitive, connected to both yourself and something larger than yourself? Do you trust that? And Luke chooses, you know, to trust that the same way I think Finn chooses to trust this little voice that says don't shoot.
He switched off his targeting computer.
He did.
Yes.
Yeah. There you go. Any other thoughts, Ken?
No, look, into the debate raging between Alden and his friend, I think Joseph said it well up top of like, there doesn't necessarily have to be a clear answer. Star Wars is there for you to constantly ask why and analyze why, and not everything is going to always sync up and work, but what a wonderful big large galaxy. And I think this is also part of what the original intention of the series was, to present these big moral questions, present them in front of you and see how you engage with it and see what you take from it. And that's the beauty of Star Wars.
Absolutely. Final thought for me is, yes, I tend to agree a little bit more with Alden's perspective, but these are absolutely perspectives. And I think anybody should and can engage with the story the way they want to. I also just think from life experience, Ken, it is a gift and a burden to perceive the stories with time in between them to form opinions based on what you thought the story was and then finding out what the story is, right? Mm. Young people who sit down and watch the original trilogy, you know, aren't as frustrated with the revelation that Luke and Leia are siblings as people were back in the day because they had years to think about it. So that's always just for me a matter of perspective, too, of some of these debates that we're having about the sequel trilogy will always exist. And some of them are really strong because we had time to speculate in between the movies. And I guarantee there is some kid sitting down right now watching the sequel trilogy on, a tablet, and will have very different concerns because the story's it's just the story. It just is. And it's playing out in front of them.
Yeah. 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 Don't forget, I spent a long time thinking Yoda was the one who trained Obi-Wan. Completely all by himself.
Yep. Nope.
Some other guy popped up.
Yeah. I mean, Obi-Wan just had Yoda in pre-K practically, you know?
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
Maybe not a perfect analogy. Anyway, we'll move on to our final question from Dan Lynn. Dan says, having really liked the first season of The Bad Batch and enjoyed listening to your Bad Batch reports, I know Joseph was on Hondo Watch as the weeks went on. I found myself on Commander Cody Watch. Do you think the second season will tell us what became of Cody in the Imperial era, seeing as we haven't had any answer in canon yet? How do you feel about this, Ken? Are you on Cody Watch now?
Yeah, I am. You know, to go in terms of music where we started the show, you got the big bands, the legendary bands, you got your Rolling Stones, you got the Beatles. I'm also a big fan of the Guess Who I think had amazing amounts of hits, and they're overlooked. People aren't going to go see Guess Who concerts, and that's for different reasons maybe, but I like the underrated Heroes of the Galaxy, and I think Rex gets his due with good reason. I love Rex. But Commander Cody, man, speaking of music, that's a deep cut music reference. I want to see some Cody. Justice for Cody.
Absolutely. Yeah, before the Clone Wars came along, Clone Wars animated series, Cody was the sort of personality of the clones, right? The human face of somebody who had a partnership and a bond with Kenobi. So, yeah, this is such a great question. I'm really loving that Bad Batch is letting us see through different characters' eyes the impacts of this sudden switch between the Republic to the Empire. I think Cody is a big missing piece of clone canon, and I would think that Rex would have some thoughts and opinions, maybe want to find him. And I think there's a possibility of having an interesting story of Cody, of he was close to Kenobi, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Is this something that makes him, you know, kind of fight back against his programming a little bit, like we've seen some of the clones do, of like, ultimately it seems like the chip wins until it's taken out, but there is, can be a little pushback. Or is he sort of all in on the chip? And like, is he obsessed with finding Obi-Wan? Is he partnered with some Inquisitors? You know, you could take that story different places. And that story, if they're doing it, is already written. So good.
I'm sorry. I was thinking about it. Yeah, that's, you know, you were my clone, Cody.
You were my brother as well. Not as close.
You were my clone commander.
I did not train you since you were very young, but but yes, we had a relationship. I knew we'd work Kenobi into it, Ken.
Yes.
Yeah. So final thing for me on this is, yeah, right there with Dana, I'm going to be on Cody watch. I'm on Hondo watch. I have so many watches because now I also really want to see the Bad Batch interact with some Jedi and get on that screen, the sort of perspective of some Jedi in that early era of being hunted. So I continue also to be on Opo Rancis's watch.
As you should.
Yeah, so many watches. Any other thoughts on this one, Ken?
No, just I love that Dan loves the Bad Batch. I continue to ruminate on how much I enjoyed that show. So glad to have Bad Batch fans around.
Yeah, looking forward to the next season. Thank you for all our questions, Dan, Alden, Libertard, and Commander Cloud. Ken, where can people find us?
Hey, we're the Force Center Podcast. We're on Twitter at Force Center Pod. We're on Instagram and YouTube as well. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. We're available on a lot of platforms. Just search to find us. But some include iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Amazon Music, and Spotify as well. Merch is available at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. Get that Speculate Responsibly t-shirt as more Kenobi news comes out. You can support us directly at patreon.com/ForceCenter. From there, you can access our Discord where you can have these kind of conversations, a virtual Star Wars bar every day if you want. I just put up the character of the week. Today was Ben Quadrinero. So go celebrate the pod racer there. You can follow me at Ken Napsok or go to my website, kennapsok.com, where on that website you can now listen directly to my radio show, Pop Rock and Radio, on Mixcloud. If you want to there, it's kind of easier for some folks to catch it there and get information on upcoming shows. I got 4 dates coming in December. Comedy dates with Mark Ellis in Washington, D.C., and a local one here at Flappers coming up if you're local to SoCal. But all information's on my website. We always like to highlight things in the real world that we want to put before you to maybe choose to get involved. For me right now, it is Be The Match at BeTheMatch.org. This is bone marrow donorship. I am a registered bone marrow donor there. A lot of people need these life-saving treatments, and the registration can happen online. It can only take 10 minutes. It's really easy to get signed up, and you could save a life if you do so. Get more information at bethematch.org. Joseph.
Yeah, you can find me Twitter, Instagram, TikTok is at Joseph Scrimshaw, and you can check out all of my other comedy adventures on my website, josephscrimshaw.com. resistbot.com. And the thing I'd like to plug is the service ResistBot. You can just Google it. They're on social media, but it's just a very easy way to text, tweet, or send a message via tweet, not just tweet at, but send a message to your representatives at any level about things that you think are important. I think it really makes a difference to let our representatives know what we want to happen, what is a priority for us. So I think ResistBot is a great service to make that so fast and so easy and direct.
Absolutely it is. Well, that is it for this week. We've had a lot of fun diving into the news, speculating, learning about Banthas, and talking about the choices that the Force puts before us. A lot there. Thank you all for listening. This has been Force Center.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.